Hello, I'm Father Charles Connor. Welcome to this series on the saint for the third millennium, Thérèse of Lisieux. As we meditate on Thérèse's faith and ours, please stay tuned.
Welcome to Saint for the Third Millennium, Saint Thérèse of Lisieux. In this series, Father Charles Connor presents the life, spiritual direction, and relevance of Saint Thérèse of Lisieux for today's Catholic and for the Church in all generations. Here now is Father Charles Connor.
The Catechism of the Catholic Church has given to all of us believers a very beautiful definition of faith. Faith is man's response to God, who reveals himself and gives himself to man, at the same time bringing man a superabundant light as he searches for the ultimate meaning of his life. Contained in that definition of faith are several points for our meditation. First of all, we know that there are objective truths that must be believed. Secondly, we also know that there is the subjective act of you and I in believing those truths. And finally, inherent in that same definition is the whole idea of a letting go, in which I surrender my own security and take Christ alone as my rock. So there's a great deal to consider when we consider the theological virtue of faith. And this is really, my good people, the makeup of all of us who are believers. We all have truths to believe. We are the ones who have to believe them, and we have to let go and allow Christ to send us his Spirit so that we might make that tremendous act of faith. Not only is it the makeup of you and I, but it most certainly was the makeup of St. Thérèse of Lisieux as well. And in all of our lives of faith, St. Thérèse has something to say to each one of us. And she says it from her own life of faith. No one would argue the point, I'm sure, that in these early years of the 21st century, we are not living in an era that could be referred to as an age of faith. Many 21st century contemporary modern, with it, men and women, do not stand up on a soapbox and deny faith. They simply ignore it. They do not care. They live the good life. They accumulate a lot of wealth and social prestige, education, all the things that are part and parcel of living the good life in the 21st century. But faith is just simply not a part of many of their lives. They're not opposed to it. They're not rebelling against it. They're simply apathetic. They do not care. It is absolutely one of the signs of the times in which we are living. Now, the interesting thing is that the period of time in which Thérèse of Lisieux lived has very definite parallels with the 21st century. In many, many ways, she was not living in an age of faith or an era of faith either. When she was just about 3 years before she was born, in 1870, the First Vatican Council was meeting. We're all familiar with Vatican II. Well, Vatican I occurred just about 3 years before Thérèse was born. And the Council Fathers gathered in Rome for the First Vatican Council had to make a solemn pronouncement on the nature and the definition of faith. And the reason they had to make a pronouncement on the nature and the definition of faith was because of the influence on the entire world of a movement which we refer to as the Enlightenment. And the Enlightenment was not too long before the late 19th century, in which the Council Fathers were meeting. Also, at the time of Thérèse, there were things like militant atheism. There was anti-clericalism. It was a period of time which produced such people as Karl Marx, Sigmund Freud, Friedrich Nietzsche. And each one of these individuals, in turn, had a tremendous impact on turning people's minds away from faith. So there were all kinds of influences at the time of Thérèse of Lisieux that strongly parallel our own examples in the 21st century. And yes, in the midst of it all, we have this young woman, this young girl at Lisieux, full of faith. Just as you and I, in today's very apathetic, very morally free world, that seems to have thrown off all the shackles of morality as people live any darn way they want to live, you and I can be people of faith in this world in which we're living today. Just as she was such a strong person of faith in the world in which she lived. Now, to understand her own condition, we look a bit at her faith background. We mentioned in a previous episode about her own mother and father who gave her her Catholic faith, Louis Martin and his wife Zélie Guérin. They took her to the font of the magnificently beautiful Church of St. Mary in Alençon in January of 1873. You can still visit the baptismal font where Thérèse was born. You can still visit the house in which she was born. The cause of her mother and father is being seriously considered for sainthood. She herself said, God gave me a mother and father more worthy of heaven than of earth. Gives us a wonderful glimpse of the kind of people that they were, the kind of faith life that they fashioned at Alençon and later on that Louis Martin fashioned for his children when he moved them from Alençon to the very beautiful home of Les Buissonnais in the town of Lisieux. Then, too, when we look at her life of faith, we have to look a little bit at a building that you can still visit in Lisieux today, which has changed very, very little since the time Thérèse was growing up. And that is the Cathedral of Saint-Pierre, where so much of her own faith life was centered. The Martin family assisted at Mass in the cathedral every Sunday and very frequently on weekdays. They would often go there on Sunday evening for the celebration of Vespers. It was in the Cathedral of Saint-Pierre that Thérèse made her first confession, received the sacrament of penance for the first time and many times thereafter. And her uncle, Isidore Guérin, her mother's brother, whom we have mentioned, the pharmacist, who had a pharmacy just down the street from the cathedral, was a church warden at the cathedral as well. It was his daughter, by the way, Marie Guérin, who became Sister Marie of the Eucharist in the Lisieux Carmel. She would be a first cousin then of Thérèse and her other sisters. Well, this magnificent cathedral was, and of course still very much is, situated in the town square of Lisieux, in the Place d'Hier. It is built in a Gothic Norman style. And as you walk down the left aisle toward the main altar, you look at the first side chapel. It is the chapel of the Annunciation. And you will see in the chapel of the Annunciation the confessional box in which Thérèse made her first confession and where she frequently went to confession as a young girl. The high altar of the cathedral was donated by Louis Martin, her father. You can still see that magnificently beautiful structure. It has not been removed from the sanctuary. And he donated it to in the same year that his daughter Thérèse entered the Carmel, 1888. In the Lady Chapel, where the Blessed Sacrament is reserved today, there is a plaque on the left wall of the Lady Chapel at the rear, recalling Thérèse's presence at weekday Mass. She loved to pray in that Lady Chapel. She prayed in particular in that chapel for a criminal by the name of Pranzini. Pranzini was a criminal who was on execution row in Paris. And as a little girl, she followed his case very, very carefully in the Parisian newspapers. And she prayed that somehow he might be reconciled to God before the end of his life. He was a fallen away Catholic, of course, who had given up religion completely. And she was delighted to read that in a very strong fashion her prayers were answered. Because just before his execution, Pranzini, who refused the services of a priest, at least asked for a crucifix. And he began kissing the crucifix several times before his execution. Thérèse read that in the newspaper, and she said that was proof positive, or she felt it was proof positive, that her prayers in the Lady Chapel of the Cathedral for Pranzini had indeed been answered. Then you have, after the Lady Chapel, an additional chapel where she used to go with her father for Sunday Mass. And it was in this chapel that you can still visit that her apostolic vocation in life was very, very much confirmed. She was sitting in there at Mass one day with her father. She would sit next to him. And in her prayer book, there was a holy card depicting our Lord on the cross with the blood dripping from his fingers very, very vividly. It fell out of her prayer book at one point, and she bent down to pick it up. And as she gazed on the figure of our Lord, she became tremendously moved. And she recalled many years later that in that chapel in the Cathedral of Saint-Pierre, she made a resolution. She decided that she would remain at the foot of the Lord's cross for the remainder of her life. An unusual manifestation of God's grace at a single moment in an individual's life. As a young child, she therefore grew up in an atmosphere of serene faith. She thought constantly about heaven. Heaven is mentioned over 60 times in her last conversations, and the word heaven appears over 700 times in the main corpus of her writings. As a young child, we know that she would become absorbed in prayer. Her faith was so strong. She would go into her bedroom, you know, and she would sit by the bed and be absolutely lost in prayer. This is especially true during her young years when she was a student at the Benedictine Abbey School in the town of Lisieux. She had a very, very certain faith then, and it was interrupted as a young girl for a period of about 14 months. We spoke about this in a previous episode. She had an intense act of scrupulosity, and her scrupulosity was not the sort that she was fearful about everything being a sin. Rather, her scrupulosity was an intense fear that whatever she did might be offending the God whom she loved so much. And as we've seen before, she always said that it was the intercession of her four siblings, her little brothers and sisters who had never lived, but who are buried there in the Lisieux Cemetery. You can visit their graves. It was through their intercession that this scrupulosity of some 14 months left this young girl and she could go back to the serene faith that she had known. So we might categorize her faith life this way. From the beginning, very serene faith. A period of 14 months where she was terribly troubled with scrupulosity. A return to that absolute faith she had known. And then finally, from Easter of 1896 until the final moment of her life, an intense and absolute unending darkness. Four periods of her faith life. During the canonization process, her sister Celine gave interesting testimony about Thérèse's absolute and serene faith as a young girl. And this is what Celine wrote. Everything, no matter how ordinary, helped to increase her faith. And purely secular things were for her an occasion of calling religious thoughts to mind. For instance, when our cousin Jean Guérin was getting married, which happened a week after Thérèse took the veil herself, she was impressed by all the little attentions Jean had lavished on her fiancé, and she immediately drew from it the lesson that she must be just as assiduous in her attention to Jesus. Imitating Jean's wedding invitation, she even sent me an invitation to her own spiritual nuptials. Nature and artistic masterpieces raised her mind to God, too, particularly on her journey to Rome. Now, that would be the trip we spoke about previously for the Jubilee of Leo XIII, when she asked the Pope for permission to enter Carmel. Particularly on her journey to Rome, she hardly knew how to express the beauty of the countryside, the splendor of the buildings, the fineness of the paintings and sculpture, or the melodiousness of the language. The servant of God's spirit of faith, Celine testified, made her see God's will in all her trials, and thus rendered them dear to her. On the occasion of our father's illness, she wrote to me, and she said that God had given us a loving look, a tear-veiled look. And this look has become for us an ocean of suffering, but also an ocean of grace and love. This spirit of faith, said Celine, made her see God's hand even in the most human situations. As she wrote to me, God alone orders the events of this life of ours in exile, but we don't see him. He hides himself, and we see only creatures. Creatures are steps or instruments, but it is the hand of Jesus that guides everything. We must see only him in everything. And whatever Sister Thérèse taught me, she practiced it herself. Quite an amazing testimony from Celine, Sister Genevieve, her sister in Carmel. Well, we mentioned that we can divide her faith life into four periods. And it is the final trial of faith that we really have to look at, because it sums up her life from Easter of 1896 until her death on the 30th of September, 1897. On Good Friday of 1896, she had the first episode of coughing up blood. Now, there was no electricity, as we would know electricity today, and this happened very late at night. She was able to reach for her handkerchief, cough up the blood, which was quite a large amount of blood, we are told. She was not entirely certain until the following morning, when the rays of light started coming into the window, exactly what had happened, but she determined, upon seeing it, that she had indeed coughed up blood. And she was ecstatic about it. Now, would you and I be ecstatic about it? We would not. We would be scared to death. She was ecstatic because she knew, as soon as she saw that blood, that ultimately her life was going to end. Her exile would be over. You see then why she's a saint in heaven and why she's a doctor of the church. What she is teaching us. Most of us, my good people, you know as well as I, would not be capable of that kind of a feeling. So it began on Good Friday. Now, on Easter Sunday of 1896, something happened. A darkness set in that was not going to end. And the darkness that set in, we have spoken about before in previous episodes. It was a temptation to doubt the existence of heaven. It was a temptation which kept telling her and telling her and telling her, when you die, that's all it is. It's finished. It is all over. And yet, during this tremendous trial of faith, stop and think of what she did. Not only was she putting up with the tuberculosis that would claim her life, so not only did she have the tremendous physical trial of her health, but she completed manuscripts B and C of her great autobiography, The Story of a Soul. We have spoken previously about manuscript A, which was the recollection of her childhood. And we talked about manuscript B, which was her response to her sister Marie and gives the heart of her doctrine of the little way. Now, manuscript C was the third and final part of what became The Story of a Soul. Manuscript C, which was also written under obedience, was the recollection of her convent life. So manuscript A, her childhood, manuscript B, the little way, manuscript C, her convent life. You put the three manuscripts together and you have The Story of a Soul. She wrote then manuscripts B and C while she was under this tremendous torment of faith. This great, great trial. And manuscripts B and C should always be read with the understanding of the background, to appreciate it all the more what she was going through when she wrote them. In addition, she wrote 11 letters to Father Maurice Bellier, and she wrote 7 letters to Father Adolphe Rouland. Dear friends, there's a tremendous lesson here for every single one of us, and the lesson is this: to keep going no matter what life's difficulties are. To keep going day in and day out. Now, what was this great trial of faith that we have been talking about? Let her describe it herself. At that time in my life, I was enjoying such a living faith that the thought of heaven made up all my happiness, and I was unable to believe that there were really impious people who had no faith. But then he permitted my soul to be invaded by the thickest darkness, and that the thought of heaven, up to then so sweet to me, be no longer anything but the cause of struggle and torment. The trial was to last not a few days or a few weeks. It was not to be extinguished until the hour set by God himself. And this hour has not yet come. And the hour would not come. She would be in that torment of darkness until 7:20 p.m. on September 30th, 1897, when she breathed her last and said, "My God, I love you." Now, during this period of time that she's undergoing the physical torture, the spiritual torture, what does her faith impel her to do? Well, first of all, she identified herself with sinners and unbelievers, and she offered her darkness for them. This is what she says. "Your child, O Lord, has understood your divine light, and she begs pardon for her brothers. She is resigned to eat the bread of sorrow as long as you desire it. She does not want to rise up from the table filled with bitterness at which poor sinners are eating until the day set by you." So, in other words, she's resigned. She knows that there are so many people in the world worse off than herself, and she identifies with those people in the world who are so much worse off than herself. Therefore, once again, what a lesson we can learn from Teresa's faith. No matter what our struggles, there are people worse off in the world than us, and there are lots of people worse off in this world than you and I. Do we ever offer our problems, our worries, our doubts of faith specifically for those people who are more afflicted than we are? Goodness gracious, we have afflictions every day of our life. Things that worry us every day. Problems and difficulties. Do we ever stop in the midst of those difficulties, in the midst of those problems, and offer them up for another person whose situation is so much worse than ours? We don't have to know who the other person is. He or she may be right next to us. You never know what's going on in the mind and the heart of someone else. Think then of what Therese is teaching us. Well, her trial would not let up. This is what her sister Pauline, Mother Agnes, said at the beatification process. "Her soul remained until the very end, plunged in a veritable night because of her temptation against the existence of heaven." Now, it is true, of course, there were intermittent moments of light, but listen to the saint herself. "It is true that at times a very small ray of the sun comes to illuminate my darkness, and then the trial ceases for an instant. But afterwards, the memory of that ray, instead of causing me joy, makes my darkness even more dense." And then she adds this thought, which we have previously referred to. "Only those who have traveled through the dark tunnel can know how dark the darkness can be." But isn't that all of us in so many ways? She uses these expressions, darkness, a tunnel, a thick fog, and so forth. And yet through it all, she continually practiced what we have referred to before, what one author has referred to as the spirituality of the smile. And that can be an awfully difficult thing to do. And finally, how did she respond to her own personal trial? How did she respond? Well, we've seen one way she offered her trials for sinners, those worse off than her. But she also offered her trials for priests and for missionaries. Remember what she said? "I have come to Carmel to save souls and especially to pray for priests." Especially to pray for priests. Also, she wrote the Apostles' Creed. She penned it to her habit on the recommendation of a retreat master. And she said it many, many times during the day. She delved into the merciful love of God in the writing of manuscript B, the very heart of the autobiography. And while she was writing it, you know, she wrote to Marie and she said, "Do not believe I am swimming in consolations. Oh no, my consolation is to have none on earth. To have none on earth. Let us love to feel nothing," she once wrote. "Then Jesus will come to look for us. And however far we may be, He will transform us with flames of love. Oh, how I would like to be able to make you understand what I feel. It is confidence and nothing but confidence that must lead us to love." That's not bad at all, is it? For someone in the intense throngs of spiritual darkness. And finally, my good friends, She responded to her distress through her letters, her poetry, even her plays written for her community. She never, ever would allow anyone in the community to know what she herself was going through. If sometimes I shed tears, my joy is to hide them well. Oh, how many charms there are in suffering when one knows how to hide it with flowers. I truly want to suffer without saying so, that Jesus may be consoled. My joy is to see him smile when my heart is exiled. My joy is to see him smile when my heart is exiled. All of our hearts are exiled, maybe every day of our life, with our trials and problems. But think of what our faith can do for us. Think of what her faith did for her.
Join us next week at this time for Saint for the Third Millennium, Saint Therese of Lisieux, on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
Sins committed against your Sacred Heart and the Immaculate Heart of Mary. Amen.